Log Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Topically Yours on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. And I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. And I know many of you are looking forward to Thanksgiving, the time to spend with your family and friends. And this year, I believe Thanksgiving is going to be on Thursday, November 28th. And that means a long weekend. I caution you, if you're driving, to drive carefully. And if you're flying, fly safe. I know with the cost of gas, many of you will be staying home this year, so I suggest to New Yorkers, and especially those in the Bronx and Westchester, that after stuffing your bellies on Thursday, rest up so that you can get plenty of belly laughs on Saturday, November 30th, when comedians Paul Rodriguez, Roberto Vanderpool, Jachi Santos, Kewgwin Victoria, and Anthony Rios, and forgive me if I haven't pronounced their names correctly. They will be taking over the stage at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts as part of the Festival del Humor, a night of laughter to remember. Lehman Center for the Performing Arts is located at 250 Bedford Park Boulevard West in the Bronx for those driving or by train. And those wanting tickets, you can get reservations in advance by calling 718-960-8833. And having said all that, I want to welcome my guest, Mr. Paul Rodriguez, who is revered as one of the first Latin kings of comedy. He is also one of the co-owners of the Laugh Factory out in L.A. Paul has made several TV appearances and hosts Miss Videos Locos on TV as well as The Newlywed Game. His film credits include Blood Work, DC Cab, Born in East L.A., Tortilla Soup, Rat Race, and Ali. His very recognizable voice has been used in voiceover roles for King of the Hill, which I love, Dora the Explorer, and Beverly Hills Chihuahua. He directed and starred in the film A Million to One, and he produced and appeared in the 2002 comedy film The Original Latin Kings of Comedy. Oh, you know what? I'm going to shut up because Paul is here, and we're going to welcome him to the show. Hi, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How are you, Gina?
I'm very good, thank you.
Well,
I understand it's raining cats and dogs out there.
Yeah, it's pouring, but we could use it, you know. We've been through a drought, and my lawn is brown, and we need to get it green up. We don't mind that. I've always liked the rain.
I love the rain. In fact, I was out there in California and with a friend of mine, Asian friend, and I was saying, wow, how brown it is. She said, where? Where?
Oh, she was referring to all the Mexicans. It is brown.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I was listening to the skit, and you mentioned in one of your skits that your dad had 5 kids, or 12 kids, actually.
Well, actually, my father had, my mother married a man who had kids already. Go figure that. And I don't really know how many kids my father had because he's been dead since 96, and I keep running into people who claim to be his child, and it's probably right. They look just like me, so my dad is prolific even in death. I don't know how he does it.
He must have been the brown Johnny Appleseed.
I guess so.
Planting his seeds everywhere.
My father was a smooth talker, apparently, you know. Even in his later years, he fathered kids here and there. Now, I'm not going to pay for his sins, but I sure do have a lot of brothers and sisters. Christmas kills me.
Well, you must have a big holiday season with Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, you were born in Mexico. When did you come to the United States?
Well, I have memories. I don't have any memories of being born in Mexico. My mom says that I was born in Culiacán, Sinaloa. But I came to America, I must have been 2 or 3. All my memories of being out in the field, you know, hanging out with my mom and she picked bell peppers or tomatoes or wherever we were. We were migrant farm workers, you know. And we traveled all up and down the United States, went as far as Minnesota to pick sugar beets. And then we started El Centro in California, right on the border of Mexico in Nogales, Arizona, and then we follow the harvest all the way up to ending our year in Washington State at Bremerton picking apples, you know. So for the first, I would say 9-10 years of my life, we didn't have a home. We just had my father had this big old car, a Hudson, a Jackson, big old car. I remember it felt like a house. We traveled in that thing up and down, but then back then the gasoline was like 9-10 cents.
Yeah, wow, look at it now.
On the road. Yeah.
Well, do you own some farming operations?
I did. Well, you know, the first thing any child wants to do is to buy their mama a house, and I was lucky enough to do that. I bought my mom a ranch up in Fresno, California, right outside of Fresno, actually, in a place called Orange Cove. Where my mom and my dad lived out their lives there, and bought them orange farms. And orange farming is a gentleman farming. It's not a real hands-on thing. Those trees, you know, they get one crop a year, right around November. They harvest, and then it starts all over again. Citrus is good farming. Lemons and oranges is what I bought them, and they loved it. Lived out their years happy. I'm glad to tell you.
See, that's a wonderful thing when you're able to come to a state in life where you can give your parents something that they love.
Yeah. My mama would do anything for my mother, really. My father was just her tenant, her guest. It's my mother I bought the house for. And she was, I lost her last year. She was just a very giving woman, you know. Her whole life was her children. She never really cared about herself or dress or anything. As long as her children were fed and were healthy, that's what made her happy, you know. And I've never met someone so selfless as my mom. So when she passed away, I went through a terrible depression for about 8 months. I just couldn't get on stage. And when I did get on stage, the mind wasn't worth thinking comedy. I was in a moment of grieving. And then about 2 months ago, I had a dream that was almost not like a dream. It was realistic. I saw her at the foot of my bed. I saw her young, beautiful, and with long braided hair. And she told me that that was part of life, and for me to go on with my life and stop grieving and be happy, and that would make her happy. And since then, I've been a lot better. Not totally fine, but a lot better. I guess her loss is something that I'll take with me for the rest of my life. Is that special to me?
That's kind of interesting, because my mother lost her son, and he also appeared to her and told her, "I've grown up since you seen me last," and he showed her what he was doing.
Wow.
And he told her to move on, that it was okay, that there's a, they live beyond here. So that's always encouraging.
I was never really a religious person. I try to think things logically, and I say, well, maybe it's a defense mechanism that we have in our bodies that makes us picture these things so that we're able to function, you know. But whether it's that or whether it really was my mom, I'd like to think it was her, and it has helped me, you know. I didn't need to go to no therapy or nothing. I mean, it's natural for a parent to go before their children. So I guess that's the way it was. I had her for 96 years. She lived for 96 years, so it's a lot. And when she passed away, people say, well, come on, she's 96, man, it's time. You know, it could be 200 years. It's never time for your mom to go, you know.
Of course.
I was very, very close to her.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about your upcoming appearance in the Bronx at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts. That's going to be part of the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, four other gentlemen are sharing the stage with you, Ruperto Vanderpool and Jacques.
That's a real Hispanic name, Vanderpool.
I was looking at that and saying, wow, that's unusual, but Ruperto works.
Yeah, Roberto works. Latinos, you never could tell, you know, Latinos come in all colors, you know, and all the names. Apparently, if you remember the Trayvon Martin fiasco, the person accused of his murder was named Zimmerman, and I used to do a routine on stage saying that I've been a Hispanic a long time. I never met a Zimmerman, but okay, you know.
Well, I guess because his father's Jewish and a judge.
Yeah, well, they should have, his name, you know, if they seem to be Latino, I want to hear something with a Z at the end of it, you know, Perez, Lopez, Gonzalez, Rodriguez, but I guess there are Vanderpools in this world.
Yeah, I know a Spanish lady named DeCamp.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
DeCamp. Oh, but we'll call it DeCampo.
Well, she says DeCamp. She says it's not Spanish, but if she's not Spanish, she sure looks...
I don't know why when I was growing up, some Mexicans or some Latinos always wanted for them to feel better about themselves that they're just not ordinary Mexicans or Puerto Ricans. They would go, well, actually, I'm Spanish. I'm Spain. I always think that Spanish people are somehow better than us. Then I went to Spain and I realized they all talk like Daffy Duck. You know, they talk with the feta. So I figured, hey, ain't any better, I'm better. So that's due to my mom. You know, she raised me to have a not low self-esteem at all, but quite the opposite. And God forgive me, she made me believe that I was special, you know, and I think you should do that to all these kids. If you have a kid, make them believe they're special and they'll live up to it, you know.
I agree. But I want to also say that sharing the stage is Jockey, J-O-C-Y, Santos.
Jockey.
Jockey.
I think it's Jockey.
Jockey. And is it Chuquin? C-U-Q-U-I-N? Chuquin?
Chuquin. I don't know any of these comedians, but I'm sure if they're at the Lehman Center, they must have gone through some kind of gauntlet. I assure the audience that they're very good. I better be on my toes if I want to keep up with them.
Well, the last one is a singer as well as a comedian, Anthony Rios, and I think I got his name right.
Yeah.
And that's
a
part
singer,
of the
huh?
festival.
Hmm? He's a singer. Well,
he's a singer and comedian.
Well, I'm going to have to step up my game and sing a song up there. I try to sing,
maybe he does. He sings his routine.
I'm terrible. Yeah, this one. I'm a terrible singer. I joined Mexican Idol, but they told me they didn't have any Idol Mexicans. So I, all Mexicans I know are working, so I don't think I wish I could sing, but singing is one of them arts that you either can sing or you can't sing, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can tell a joke or you can have somebody show you how to tell a joke, but singing is that's another kind of gift that God gives people.
Well, is this festival Del Humor, the Night of Laughter to Remember, is that part of a one-night engagement, or are you touring with the
festival? No, that's part of a one-night engagement. I got to return back to Los Angeles right away. I'm going to be going to New York on the 25th. It's an honor to speak before the AGL, the 100th anniversary. I've been asked to speak to them, and I will, and then after that I'll stay there until the 30th. But I got to hurry back to Los Angeles. I'm happy to announce on your radio show that we just signed a deal with ABC for a television series that I wrote, starring Edward James Olmos, myself, and my son, my real son in life,
the skater,
Paul Jr. It's called Three Generations. It's about just an old Korean War veteran, which is Edward James Olmos, myself, his son, and both of us have hit hard times. We're living in my kid's house. My kid runs a small brewery. It's called Three Generations. How I pitched it to the network, I said, hey, I got this idea. It's Stanford and Son plus one. And it worked. They liked it. So we're going to be shooting that in February.
Well, congratulations. We'll all be waiting to see it.
I hope so. Because I could use the money and then become really arrogant and then not talk to people.
Well, I'm sure that's not going to happen.
How many people know my phone
number? I see that you do a lot of humanitarian work. You work with the Spanish community. You work on the Water Coalition. Tell me about that.
Well, I bought my mom a farm, and then one day she called me about 6 years ago. She says, something's wrong. They turned the water off. And I said, well, Mom, you got to pay the bill. So she said, yeah, I paid the bill. So I went down over there, and I figured this will take me a day or two to fix it. It's got to be some kind of messed up. Only to learn that the environmentalists had passed a law that if the fish, the delta smelt in San Francisco, if the fish during their mating season, they mate every couple of years, they would shut the water off, you know. They didn't care that you're farming and everything you own is there. They just shut the water off. And without water, you're not farming. You're just babysitting a piece of desert. So I went in there, and it's been 6 years fighting the environmentalists to try to get allocations for the water for us to continue to farm. But we're close to winning this battle. My organization, the one I belong to, I chair, is called the Latino Water Coalition, and we've been able to move the forces via in Sacramento and in Washington to try to get our fair share of the water. We don't want this water for swimming pools. We don't want this water for any kind of other reasons than to farm and to grow food, which is a noble thing to do. And I'm going to continue to fight that until
society needs.
Exactly.
Can't exist without food.
But yeah, but look, I'm an environmentalist. I believe that we should take care of it. We're stewards of the land. But there are some environmentalists that are so extreme that they want to return back to how it used to be. Now, there's 38 million people in California. It's the fastest growing state. All statistics tell us that not too far in the future, we're going to have over 50 million people coming here to California. So there's no way we can move everybody out and let the salmon run in the streams they used to. They said they want to return it how it used to be. I said, well, if that's the case, then, you know, the saber-toothed tiger used to hang around over here where the ball is. We cannot return. You know, we gotta have a compassion for the fauna and the animals around. But, you know, human beings still have to count for more than that. You know, we are the top of the food chain, and we are intelligent creatures. And I think if you spend every nickel you have on a farm, and then all of a sudden you don't have no water for that farm, I think that's the betrayal of the original trust. The intent to grow food is a noble thing, you know. And we grow the best tomatoes and oranges and everything else you can think of. Right there in that area where I live around Fresno, they grow 98% of all tomatoes that are consumed in America. So today, if you go to McDonald's or someplace and you get some ketchup, it came from my hometown.
Wow. You know, we also, as a people, have to start to control our population, because
absolutely,
maybe we're also getting out of control with that.
I've cut down myself. I only got three girlfriends.
You only got three girlfriends?
Yeah, I'm doing my share.
Well, I'm going to do my share right now and give the folks the box office number for Lehman so they can call up for tickets. By the way, folks, the show is Saturday, November 30th at 8 o'clock. If you want tickets, you can call 718-960-8833. And you can also go online at www.lehmancenter.org. So I suggest you run to the box office.
All I'm saying is, after you folks have your turkey at home, come and see three turkeys on that steak, you know?
Speaking of turkeys, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Well, I'm going to be on an airplane flying to New York. I speak on the 25th. My Thanksgivings are usually on the road. So are my Christmas I try to spend with the family. But now there really isn't no family. I live alone with my three chihuahuas. And I just lock them up and leave them a bowl of water. And they just got to wait till I come back.
Oh.
No,
when
my
you
chihuahuas
come back,
spoiled.
They're like, what, bones?
No, my chihuahuas are spoiled. I'm only saying that they run my world. I put them in a hotel for dogs.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, you gotta love somebody. I got two sons, but they're grown and they're gone, so all I got now is my chihuahuas.
I was reading about your son, who's the pro skateboardist.
Yes,
And I watched him, and he's pretty good.
He is. But he should
put a helmet on.
I didn't know when he told me he was going to be a professional skateboarder, my heart sank. I said, really? A skateboarder? What is that? You know, I want you to go to the law school, the medical school. You know, you're a smart kid. You should do something. And he said, Dad, I'll do whatever you want me to do if you show me your diploma, your degree. So I said, give me a second. Let me get on the Internet. I'll have a diploma from some university in no time. No, I couldn't show him one, So he
went his way.
Well, yeah, he's got a Nike contract. You know, if you could ever have a son that you can borrow money from, I recommend it. You know.
Well, I'm going to ask you about being a Republican, if you don't mind.
Sure. I don't mind at all.
What are your thoughts about how they're showing such disrespect for America's first person of color, president of color?
I think it's wrong. I believe it's wrong. You got to understand that. Not everything in the Republican Party that they say I agree with. But I look at it this way. You can't change anything from the outside. You got to get in and change something from the inside. I've told in several meetings with the Republicans, I said, listen, unless you're able to attract middle-class Latinos into this party's going to disappear and go the way of the bull moose party, you know? It's going to disappear. Now, you got to understand that in both parties, there are extremes. There are Democrats that say outrageous things, and I'm sure you don't agree with everything they say. And I believe that I'm more of an independent than I am a Republican, because I believe that's the way to vote. I think all of us, as voters, there are some issues that we are very conservative in, and there are issues that we're liberal on. So there's no really, I don't vote the party line. I don't go to the ballot box, and every Republican on that list has my approval. No, you have to be a wise consumer, but you also have to reserve the right to disagree. I have friends that got vehemently angry when I changed parties and didn't support the last presidency. But I said, look, if Mr. Obama wins, he's my president. And I'm behind him. Let's go. I happen to have the right to say, well, I don't think he's the right man for the job this time. I voted for him the first time. I disagree with a lot of his policies. For example, the Fast and Furious gun that he allowed to Mexico has cost a lot of blood. I don't believe in spying on Americans. The NSA is wrong. Spying on leaders, that sort of thing. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have some good qualities. I believe that Obamacare is a good thing. But if you're sick and you're broke, you're for Obamacare. If you're rich, you really don't care. You know,
exactly.
I think Harry.
Someone told me they called up and they found out that they only have to pay $200 a month, which they were spending a lot more before that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. See, on the things that they're right, we got to support them on that. This is the American way. We can disagree, and then after that's over. But let me also say that my act is nothing political. When you come to see my show, I'm not there to change your mind, to convert you, to alert you, or anything like that. I'm there to entertain you, and I stay away from topics that are controversial. When I'm asked to go speak on this point or another point of view, then I do my speaking. There's a time and a place for everything. And the Lehman
Center... Well, I absolutely agree with you on that. There's a time and a place. I want to mention one thing a friend of mine told me I better mention or he'll get upset. Do you know a guy named Jeff Wald?
Jeff?
Wald.
Jeff Wald?
W-A-L-D?
Yes, absolutely. He was married to Helen Reddy, the one that sang We Are Women Hear Me Roar. Yeah, I know Jeff very well.
Yeah, it's his executive producer, and he told me he knew that you two knew each other.
Very well. He used to be my manager for many, many years. He handles James Brolin, who married Barbara Streisand. Yeah, he's a great friend. He handles Mike Tyson. He's a great friend of mine. He doesn't manage me no more because in my big head I decided to go on my own, you know. So, but other than that, we parted as friends, absolutely.
Okay, now I've done that for him. So let me ask you, how did you go into comedy? You went from the fields to comedy, or you went from the military to comedy, or how did you take it up?
Well, I was drafted, and I didn't want to go to the Marines, so I joined the Air Force, and after the Air Force, I used the GI Bill to go to school. While I was going to school, I got into a theater group, and I discovered that, hey, all the pretty girls are in the theater, you know? They're not in accounting. So I went there, and sure enough, you know, I loved it. The minute I hit the stage, I realized that I couldn't remember the lines of Shakespeare, but I could make up my own lines, and the audience laughed, and, you know, it was an epiphany. When I went on stage, I discovered that this is what I was meant to do, to annoy people or to make them laugh. It's a noble thing, you know? So at the time when I started, there was no Latino stand-ups. You know, the great late Freddie Prinze, who was my hero, had long since passed away. So I didn't know what a Latino comic sounded like. I went up on stage and I made up my own kind of thing. And now there's a lot of Latino comedians, and I'm proud to say I had something to do with that, I hope.
Well, they say you were the first one, the Latin kings of comedy, one of the first.
Well, that kind of royalty, calling myself a king is not the... We actually bought the rights from the original Latin kings and Lace of Entertainment, the African-Americans who were successful. I saw them, and I said, well, let's see if we can do that. But, the king thing, I don't get up in the morning and put on a crown and go, hey, I'm the king. You know, if people say that, well, of course you're flattered by it, but they're far from right. I don't know about a king or a duke or a prince or anything like that. But because every day, one day you can be on stage and you'll be very funny and you are the king. You feel like the king. And the next day you're in front of an audience and it's not working. Then you're just a lonely bastard boy. That's all you are.
I was going to say it. It must be excruciating when people don't laugh. Do you get your material from life itself or...
I go up on stage and it flows, it happens. I'll talk about how I got there, where was I doing, whatever's on the news, you know, whether it be the Philippines or whether it be whatever it is. I believe there's humor in everything, and everything is game. You know, there are some topics you really don't want to do that, but there are other reasons. You can make fun of anything if you have that mindset, you know. I once asked Richard Pryor, who was my mentor, and I was his gopher at the Comedy Store, how do you write? And he says, I go on stage with what's bothering me today, and I speak about that. And he crafted material out of that. What bothered him was in his mind. Perhaps one of the most truthful comedians I ever met, you know. If he was on the news for drug addiction, he talked about his problems. He let you into his life. And if you have fans that really are interested in you, they're interested in that. They want to know what's kicking, what's making you hurt. You know?
Well, for you, you're co-owner of the Laugh Factory. Is that a way to help other comedians get to the front and be recognized?
I could say yes to make me look good, but the truth is, I wanted to guarantee that there was a place where they wouldn't throw me off stage and they'd let me work. The only way to do that was to own your own club, you know? So I did that. I knew the main owner, Jimmy Masada, for many years. He was a struggling comedian, but he had a good business mind. And he got a lot of other comedians to invest in him, such names as Tim Allen, Jim Carrey, and people like that who own far more points than I do. But, I think if helping, I started Latino Night at the Laugh Factory. Latino Night has brought us things like George Lopez and it's brought us all the hot comedians, Latino comedians working. Yeah, if I'll take some of that credit, you know, not all of it, but I'll take some of it, sure.
Well, I also want to bring to the fore Gravy. Tell me about Gravy. That's a project that's coming up this year.
Yeah, Gravy is directed by Rode. The guy who did Sight on television, and it's a horror movie, believe it or not. It's got Gabriel Sidibe, and she's the young lady from Precious,
Mm-hmm.
And it's about these cannibals. It's a horror movie, believe it or not. It opens December 12th. I hope it does well. It's my first horror movie. I say that they did that movie by not putting on makeup. That's scary enough. But it's got a great cast. It's got one of the stars of a Broadway. Her name is Benton Redden. And it's got Silverman, myself, and it's terrific. I saw a screening of it last week, and I think people are going to be shocked because you see these characters, you don't think of them as a horror movie, but how they sneak up on you and how these cannibals begin to prepare you with their own chef, it's kind of creepy, you know. I say it's kind of like Silence of the Lambs meets the Food Channel. Yeah.
Well, also, I want to, and it comes out December, right, this year.
Yes,
I want to mention
December 12th.
That. It'll be out.
Yep.
And I want to also mention that you have won several awards. You won the NCLR Bravo Award for Outstanding Performer by a male.
Yeah, well, I was.
And that was in a musical, a variety or musical series special?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've tried everything. I'm, one of these days, my kids are going to put the... me singing on stage, and they're going to go, "Dad, what were you thinking?" I'm going to say, "Dad, those were my drug years, kid." But I try to do that. All the awards that you get are just basically awards people give you because they know you're going to die soon. But I don't take them too serious. I'm grateful for them. And then the only awards that really matter is the applause and the laughter of the people every night. You know, like I said, you can have all the awards in the world, and if you go up on stage and you suck, that ticket is very expensive, you know, and if you're good, then that ticket isn't expensive. They say that a good comedian is always underpaid, no matter what you pay him, and a bad comedian is always overpaid, no matter what you pay him. So I believe in that.
I remember people brought by how good they are. They had a guy named Mr. Hamburger.
Yeah.
And one of the performers was late, and he rushed all the way from New Jersey to cover for that person, and he was so funny that the people didn't even care about the headliner.
They forgot about the hamburger.
They loved Mr. Hamburger. He was so good.
There are people like that. You know, when I started, I've had people that open for me, many people open. And let me tell you, one of the most difficult, hardest people that I ever had to follow was Carrot Top, believe it or not. He was hard to follow. He got standing ovations. After a while, I said, "Son, you got to go on your own. You're making me work too much." I've had everybody open for me, including, Martin Lawrence used to open for me, and we used to travel, and who else? Well, I worked with everyone from Jim Carrey and all of them, but I've been around for almost 40 years now, 38 years at it, so I should know something, so I can pretty much guarantee the folks that are nice enough to come see me that, you know, you'll get your money's worth. I'm not saying these guys in front of me, I'm sure they're very talented and very, very funny, but if they're not, I got your back.
Well, there you go, and you're going to like the Lehman Center community because it's mostly Hispanic and black people, and they love to laugh.
I'm home. They're tough too, boy. I'm telling you, black audiences are tough. Boy, they make you nervous.
Tell me about it.
I did the show at the Apollo, right? And they were kind of, they didn't boo me. They were nice. They were very nice. And it was during the Rodney King debacle. And it was pretty hard to see other comedians backstage throwing up. They were so nervous. But if you got material and if you could connect and if you know what you're talking about and if you can speak the language that they understand, you'll be all right. I've always had great audiences. I used to open for Patti LaBelle in Philadelphia.
Wasn't she a sweetheart?
She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She loves hot food. She always travels with a box of Louisiana hot sauce and all kinds of stuff. So we had the hot sauce thing going. So I've had the opportunity to, everyone from Lionel Richie to, you know, in the beginning years, that's all comedians do is we open up for these big stars. And it was wonderful. I made a lot of friendships. I wouldn't change a moment of my life for anything. It's been a great ride.
And that's the important thing, that you came here into life and you've risen to the occasion. Because I think if you're doing what you love, what better thing is that?
That is the secret to life, to find something that you love to do. You don't even call it work. You won't work any day. And if you can get paid for it, that's even better, you know?
Tell me about it. Well, we're getting to the end of the show, and I want to mention one more time that you're going to be performing at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts in the Bronx on November 30th, and it was sure to be an excellent show. If you love to laugh, then come along, and if you want tickets, call 718-960-8833 or go online at www.lehmancenter.org.
Or my Uncle Ramon backstage, he'll be selling them on a discount backstage. I'm joking about that, but thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time and for your audience. I want to thank them and invite them cordially to come and check it out.
And I'm sure they will. I know I'll be there.
Oh, well, you got to make yourself known. You got to come up to me and go, it was me. The one you had a, you were talking
well,
to.
Well, sometimes they let me backstage, but sometimes they don't.
They will let you backstage.
The manager doesn't want to. Oh,
can't
okay. We'll take a
I'll
picture
I'll have your name back there, for real.
Hmm?
I'll have your name on the backstage pass. Come and say hello.
Oh, thank you so much. Go, please take a picture with me.
I sure will. I'll sketch one.
I'll bring the paint.
All righty. All right. Very, very good. Very nice to see you, Ms. Shuler. Really nice.
It'd be a pleasure to meet such a wonderful guest in person.
Well, I don't know about wonderful, but you'll see. I'll do my
best. Well, you must be tired. Aren't you on the road more than you're home?
Yeah, but like I said, I was bred to do this. I was bred to be out there. I don't even know why I have a house. I'm never here. But, you know, I think that the lady that cleans my house uses the pool more than I do. And that's all right.
Somebody got to swim.
Somebody. I remember I came back one time. There were a bunch of kids in my pool, and I jumped the fence, and I didn't have my keys. And they go, "Mister, you don't belong here." I go, "Who are you guys?" And the lady cleans my house. She's been with me for almost 9 years, 10 years. And
did she recognize
it was
you?
Cool. It was nice to be thrown out of your own house.
Well, you know, we folks of color rarely swim, so
well,
we just have the
kind of hard,
pool
but you
for aesthetic.
Find yourself here in Los Angeles, oh, you'll swim. I said, in the East Coast, the weather's kind of cool, but here in the summer, it's almost mandatory to have a pool, you know?
Wow. That's great.
You come and see us. Mi casa, su casa. I mean that.
Well, thank you. I'll have to do it one day when you're home.
All right. I'll be home then.
All right. Well, thank you again, and I'll see you November 30th, which is not that far away.
Nope.
And in the meantime, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Are you at least going to have some turkey somewhere? Fried turkey at that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have some of that fried, that Mexican fried honey turkey. I sure will.
Well, I was trying to hear some parts of that. Did you say your mom ground up cornflakes and honey and egg batter?
Yes, she made this batter to rub on the turkey to fry in it. It was cornflakes, I know. Sometimes it was peanuts, ground up peanuts, cornflakes. And she whipped it into with eggs and batter, and some other, I think, little flour. And they would coat the whole thing. And then when you dip it in the hot grease, yeah, that thing just sizzled. But first, she would dip it first to cook it. And then once it was not quite fully cooked, then she put that thing in and she stuffed it with chorizo, which is Mexican sausage, a real red one, and potatoes. And then she sealed it up, and that thing was delicious. And
I bet. I told you, my mother once, she said she got this big fryer, and she dropped the turkey into the big fryer and fried it. And it's the first time we had it that way, but it was wonderful.
Unbelievable. We love fried food. I'm telling you, black Latinos, we love fried food.
Yes,
you know,
we do.
It's not in our life, but it extends our smiles.
Yes, it does. Even with the grease running down the sides of her mouth.
I had
we just rub it on our complexion.
By the time I was 9.
What did you say?
I said I had quadruple bypass by the time I was 9. I ate so much fried food, you know? Yeah.
I know a Spanish lady that she eats so much fried food, it comes out of her pores and they use it for collagen. She sells it for collagen.
We don't recommend, no doctor recommends it, but what are you going to do? You know, life has very few pleasures like that. The big three, eating is one of them.
Absolutely. But anyway, I'm going to let you go. We'll never get off.
Thank you very much. Thank you and your public.
You're quite welcome, and I want to thank my audience. We've been talking to Paul Rodriguez, and again, go and see him on November 30th at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts. And this is Deirdre Shuler, your host, and I want to thank my audience for making my topic topically yours. We're going to end the show with a remainder of the skit that Paul Rodriguez was doing at the top of the show. So enjoy.
You know you got too much money. Michael Jackson, if you're watching, you know you got too much money when you want to buy the body of a dead dude. He wanted to buy the body of the elephant. What? Is Michael Jackson walking around his palace and he goes, that corner, I just don't know. You know, a palm tree, a couch, an end table, nah. A dead guy, yeah. He wanted to pay $5 million for a dead guy. I said, Michael, give me $500. I'll dig you somebody fresh. Sister Janet. Personally, I think Janet and Michael are the same person. I've never seen them together. They seem to pace their albums a year apart. And what is this? What is this, Janet? What is this? This is like a chiropractor's wet dream. It's like, oh. And Michael Jackson, this. Here's a family making a fortune out of every neurological disease. Somebody gets a spasm, we'll all be doing this. There's something, you know. Oh, Michael's got a Charlie horse. This will be a big hit tomorrow. Well, there goes my shot at meeting Bubbles. Have a great night. Please give. Please give. Get deep until it hurts.
And you've been listening to the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.